Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all know how I do it. This is Patrice Chocolate Banks, C-H-O-C-L-E-T. And you guys are tuned in to Everybody is a Star live on Tribe Family Channel. Thank you so much for tuning in with us tonight on a Friday night. The weekend is about to start, and we're going to kick it off for you real, real, real good tonight. Now, what you need to do is take this time out right quick to go get your tablets, your whatever you get to write. People don't use paper and pencils anymore, so whatever you do to take notes, this is what you need to go get, because this is going to be a Funk 101 session tonight. I am so excited about our guest tonight. In the meantime, though, I forgot to say hey, and I hope you guys had a wonderful week. See, I'm so excited. I'm forgetting to wish that y'all had a wonderful week and just be in joy with you that it's all over and the weekend is starting, okay? And thank you for joining us tonight, and we're going to kick it off on for real, okay? For real. Hear me. R-E-E-L. Remember, like, you know what I'm saying? Remember, like, Real to Real? Anybody remember Real to Real? Okay, so you know I keep it straight, right? So all around the world, when I say straight, you say funk. Y'all ready? Here we go. Straight.
Funk.
All right, I heard you from all the way around the world. Okay, listen. Tonight's guest, I'm so excited, is an American musical treasure, whose career spans five decades, okay? I want to be like him when I grow up. He has been a producer. I should say has been because he's still with us. He's a producer, writer, arranger, performer, plays keyboards. His performances have been recorded with too many icons to mention right now. If I start mentioning them right now, then we wouldn't have a show, because I'd be too busy listing all of them. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring him on, and we're going to let him talk about everything. I'm going to try to squeeze every bit of juice out of him that I can for you guys tonight, okay? So tonight, our very special, honorary, iconic guest is Mr. Clarence McDonald. Hey, Clarence, how you doing?
Patrice, how are you? Great to be with you tonight.
You know what? I am so glad that you are here tonight, that you could take time out, and I'm just beside myself, so you just have to please excuse me, but I'm just a happy camper right now, okay? And so I don't want to waste any time. We're going to jump right in with both feet. Is that all right with you?
Yes, it is. I'm here to have a little fun with you tonight.
Okay, good. So I like to start from the beginning. The beginning being, like, where were you born and raised? You know what I'm saying? Where you hailed from?
Okay, that's easy. Born in Los Angeles. Grew up in Los Angeles. I've lived in lots of places, but that's been home up until the last year. You know, and then we moved to Nevada, but L.A., went to school, Hooper Elementary School, Carver
Junior
High School.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to ask you to do, is to shout out your schools, shout all your schools out. So Hooper Elementary and what else?
Carver Junior High School, then I went to Fauché, and then I went to Dorsey, graduated from Dorsey, and then went to L.A. City College, and then L.A. State College. So, as a friend of mine said so nicely, fifth grade was the best 3 years of my life.
So, listen, I just have to tell you this. I went to Fauché. I went to Dorsey, and I went to L.A. City College for about a month because my mom told me I either had to go to school or get a job. So I went there for, I can't believe that. So you were straight from the hood. You were from the same hood also. So now I'm even more excited. So to meet somebody, I wasn't born in L.A., so I was born in Texas. So
what part? That's where all of my people are from.
What part? East Texas, Tyler, Texas. Shout out Tyler, Texas.
I'm the only one in my family that was born in Los Angeles. Everybody else in my family was born either in Houston or Dallas-Fort Worth or a small town called Mejia.
Okay. Well, see, that's where it comes from, you know, because you can't mess with Texas. You know that. Don't let me start listing all the icons that have come from Texas. I'll just say one, Sly, and I can go on and on, but I'll stop with him. Well, Larry Graham. Okay, now I'll stop. So, but the fact that you were actually born in Los Angeles, you know, there's not too many people that can say that they were born in Los Angeles. Okay, so now.
No, when I was in school, maybe out of 30 kids in class, three of us were born there. Everybody came from somewhere else.
That's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. Okay, so now, of course, music, orchestras and bands and all that, was still a part of the school curriculum. So tell me this, what were your first musical influences?
Okay, well, first of all, my first musical instrument was saxophone. And
okay.
I went from that to trumpet and trombone, and my lips kept growing, and I didn't, and I actually ended up, I got a scholarship to USC playing tuba, or euphonium, you know, as it were. And I finally realized, you know what, I think I'm going to take up something that does not require an embouchure. So I started on piano.
So let me ask you this. What was it about the horns that attracted you?
Well, and I found this out in later life. I think all of my favorite arrangers, like Paul Reiser, when you start to check and ask all of these guys, they were trombone players, and I finally figured it out. Playing trombone, that's the tenor instrument, so mm-hmm. you get to see what's going on above you and below you. But mm-hmm. every time I checked and found a really good arranger that I like, and also like David Blumberg, it always turned out that they played trombone. Yeah, because mm-hmm. that was the heart of the orchestra. And to be the complete orchestra was piano, because that required you to play treble clef and bass clef, so you had to get, you know, dexterous and get fairly smart. So I ended up in piano, and the reason I wanted to get in the choir, and my pastor, I'm not going to call his name, bless his heart, but he said to me very politely, he said, son, God loves you, but if you want to get in the choir, you better learn to play something because you can't sing.
So,
and he
okay.
was right.
So that's where, this is where I want to go back to. These are the roots. So did you start in church? I mean, like, what were your very first musical influence? Like, what did your mom and daddy play? And what kind of music were you listening to in the house as you grew up? Did you have to go to church all the time? And did church influence you musically? You know, where did it start?
Oh, I think for most black musicians I know in L.A., it came from the church. That's where it started, and that's where it will always end up. Gospel and R&B are the basis of American music, and you can do or say whatever you want, but you can't get away from them. They are the root from which all of the trees grow. But
that's right.
I was very fortunate because there was a music teacher in Los Angeles, and everybody who lived here, ended up studying with her. Her name was Alma Hightower. This was the sweetest lady you would ever meet. She was short. She could play every instrument. If you didn't play something right, she would just take your instrument and play it for you to show it to you. The people that she had, like Roy Ayers, who lived two doors from Miss Hightower on Avalon, Dexter Gordon, it's like just about everybody that came out of Los Angeles in the 40s and 50s was trained by Alma Hightower. And what I loved about her most was she made you understand there was no such thing as a jazz musician or a rock and roll musician. You were a musician. So you learned everything from classical music to the Philip Sousa, all of the marches. And she was probably the driving influence in me being successful in the music business.
Okay. So now what kind of music was being played in your home?
You could always find a little dirty blues. You could find, you know, you had Jackie Wilson. You know, everywhere you went, and that was the thing I loved, everywhere you went as a kid, there was music. And the great thing, which I severely miss nowadays, is there were always little nightclubs or joints where you could go and there was live music playing. And I feel very badly for the kids now who've become academically astute but didn't have the joy of learning how to go out and play with each other, because that's what the clubs did. Now they don't have that anymore. And unfortunately, they've removed lots of music and arts from the school system.
Right. That's right. So now let's name some of these clubs that you used to go. So in the household, you said there was blues, so you were influenced by the blues and Miss Hightower. So now these little clubs you used to go to, could one of them have been the 5-4 ballroom?
You know it. Marty's on 58th Street. Don't get me started. And where we lived in high school was right around the corner from Memory Lane. I lived on 3rd Avenue in Santa Barbara, which is now King Boulevard. And I used to work. I was like 15, 16 years old. And I was working with a singer, Larez Alexandria, and a really great singer, Sam Fletcher. You know, but you got a chance, and you worked all of the joints, but since I was underage, they would make me go home on the break and then come back.
Okay, all right. I heard that. So now, just name some of the joints that you worked in here in L.A. back in those times. I said 5-4 because I know 5-4 was popping at a certain time. What else? Which other one?
Oh, the Tiki Room, Dynamite Jackson's, the Interlude Club, the Ruby Yard Room, Adams West, the It Club, the Parisian Room. Oh, we could do that for a while.
What about now? I remember Guys and Dolls. What about Guys and Dolls? Remember Guys and Dolls? It was on Crenshaw.
Oh, I does every club that you can name, I can tell you when it was built. Yeah, I remember when Jim Brown gave John Daniels the $50,000 to open Maverick's Flats.
Okay, so, now see, this is what I'm saying. This is a tidbit. Because who knew that? I didn't know that. I didn't know that Jim Brown was the reason why Maverick's Flat came about. So Jim Brown was sponsored that.
Yeah. He spent a lot of money in the music community. Yeah. And see, that was the other thing that was good in those days. There were lots of people who had spendable cash who would back a group. In those days, it wasn't corporate like it is now.
Mm-hmm.
You found 4 or 5 people that would get together and say, hey, that group's got a little talent. Okay, then we'll put some money behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the thing about Maverick's Flat is everybody went through there. You know, Maverick's Flat was the place to to go, you know, to learn, to study. And also a total experience, you know, total experience was very integral for a long time. And like you said,
we could go on and on. I live 6 blocks from Total Experience. If you went up Mount Vernon, the circle view and turn left, I was right. I had the house at the cul-de-sac. So, no, nothing that went on Crenshaw got past me.
Listen, I went, like I told you, I went to Foshan and Dorsey, too. So that tells you that I, you and I don't even know how, you know what I'm saying, how we missed each other. I don't even know how that happened. But...
Well, it may be my age, but I'll never mention it.
Well, yeah, it might have been. Just by a few years, maybe. Okay, but it's just
oh,
so
no, but you know what? The people
go
at
ahead.
Dorsey, like Billy Preston was there, Jerry Peters, and we had all kinds of great musical people that came out of junior high school and high school. So
right. You
could go anywhere at any given time and you find somebody and you say, and they're just doing this for fun. And the main thing, and I have to mention this because I don't know what happened with that. Going back to church,
mm-hmm.
I remember everybody at church could sing and play. I mean, it was
right. Like,
I remember one time Pastor Wilson saying, oh, the organist is caught and broke down. We in trouble. Sister Johnson, and she was in cooking in the kitchen. She said, could you come in and play till the organist gets here? She came in and threw down like Jimmy Smith. I laughed. So everybody could sing or play or both.
That's right, because churches were universities within themselves when it came to music. That's where you got taught. All the elements of music was straight from the church, just straight from the church.
Oh, yeah, because you know what? Especially you got ear training. You got a lot of common sense. You got stuff that they now spend a lot of money in college teaching, because in church, Sister Johnson would start singing, Amaze. And by the time she got to Maze, now, she ain't getting to Amazing Grace, just Amaze. She wanted to hear a chord, which means you better have figured out what key she was in and get behind her and get to playing. So, oh, no, that was truly the university of getting your act together.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you don't, as far as I'm concerned, if you don't go through the church, the university of Jesus, you can, you know, it's too much there. You need to know. It's too much there you need to know, especially in these days and times, really, since they've taken music out of schools. The church is like one of the last places like that's left to go. Really, all of the best musicians are still in the church. They are still in the church. All the ones that are playing real music, they are in the church. The singers, they're still in the church. You know, even the entertainers, they come back and they play and they sing in the church where they started. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So now,
well, I'll tell you, and I have to say that speaking of churches, I had the pleasure. I was the musical director at O.C. Smith's Church, City of Angel, until he died. And then I stayed like 5 years afterwards until Robbie, his wife, closed the church. And always
okay.
used to like to tell people, basically City of Angels was a party disguised as a church, because on any given Sunday, you had somebody coming in. If it wasn't a Lou Rawls, it was a Les McCann, a Della Reese, you name it, James Moody. It was every Sunday. It was like, who's going to show up and just tear the house down? I had fun over there.
And that's true, because I came more than once to come and support my good friend Brenda Lieger, you know, because she...
Oh, that's
she
my good
me.
Buddy.
That okay, that's my good buddy, too. And I came, like I said, more than once to support her because she was a part of that. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So now, let's follow your career. Let's see how your career went. Okay, so now you're playing in all the local clubs, all the joints. You have named all of them. I don't think you missed one. and had to go home on the break because you were underage. So then what happened? How did it go after that?
Okay. This is another one of those short stories. With Larez Alexandria, who was a really great jazz singer, I had gotten a call to go play with her. So she was playing at a club up on Sunset Boulevard. So I came in, and I said, oh, yeah, my name's McDonald. And she said, oh, great, good to see you. Now, where's your father? I said, he's at work. She looked at me, I said, no, I'm the piano player. And it was this look like, oh, my God, getting some pablum. You know, after about two or three songs, we became the best of friends for the next 10 years. But there were so many stories like that because the fun of it was people would help you in those days. You go to a club and you thought you could play, and you were okay, but you wasn't all of that. And they wouldn't, wouldn't hurt your feelings. What they would do is they would show you what you needed to do and then tell you, now come back when you got that together. And that's the thing I miss now because nobody's leading the kids or telling them what they can do to get better. They're just telling them what they're doing wrong. And I was very lucky because in high school, my student teacher who was teaching at Dorsey was Charles Lloyd, a saxophonist. And he was playing with Chico Hamilton. And Chico lived on 6th Avenue. I lived on 3rd Avenue. So consequently, I ended up working with Chico Hamilton when I was in the 11th grade. And I used to laugh because we'd go up to Fillmore up in San Francisco, and we'd play. And then we had to leave and drive back so I could get to school by 8 o'clock.
But see, it was all fun. It was all good. It was not work. It was fun.
No. Well, you know what it was, too? People enjoyed learning in those days. Nowadays, everybody knows everything. In those days, it was like, what can I learn new today? What can I put into my stash?
And you know, all that energy in those days, too, you know, it was so much energy because the energy was being created by creativity. That's where the energy came from. People were creating things and learning and, you know, borrowing from one another and not competing, like, in a real negative way. You know what I'm saying? So it was just, that's the part that I remember the most about it when I was coming up, you know, and cutting my teeth on the funk, was that, you know, everybody was just, you know, one big family, helping everybody else. You know what I'm saying? See, what lick you could come up
and
with.
And it felt like that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The music felt like harmony in those days. It was not competition. Everybody was playing to make the total picture better and bigger.
Absolutely. And that is like, so I don't know, to be quite honest with you, I don't know what they're doing in music today. I don't know what's happening in music today. I don't know if they're competing, if they try to kill each other. I don't know what they're trying to do. But I just know what it used to be like and what it should be like. Okay, so now.
Well, I'd like to say this, and with all due respect to the youngsters, and I worked with lots of the rap groups. And the saddest thing was they didn't have background to work from. I remember going to so many sessions where a guy would say, hey, man, can you play like this on this record? And it's like, you mean play like that? That is me. And it was like, you realize they didn't mean any harm.
You know, they just didn't know better.
I'm going to use the name this time because he's a really nice guy. And when you don't know, you don't know. I went on the road, I think it was in 1990, with Soul to Soul. And I never will forget Jazzy B asking me, well, where did you guys get your samples from? And I said, oh, my God.
Bless his heart.
I said, and now understand, they had the number one record in the country, Back to Life, Back to Reality. didn't know a note of what they had. They have a natural genius. I wish they had been given a chance to get the education so they could understand how to keep reproducing it. And
okay.
What happened was told them, I said, there are no samples. We are the samples. So I started taking him to a nightclub so that they could start to see people play. And then one day I was talking to him, and I said, well, back in 1964, I used to travel on the road with Ray Charles. And he looked at me and he said,
Wait. We're getting way ahead of ourselves now. Because I want to be like, yeah, okay, I want to keep this flowing, okay? So now, okay, let's go back to where you were playing in the clubs around town locally, too young to be playing and doing, but, you know, Woodshed and doing everything that we all did. So now, when did you get your first big break?
Well, I'm not quite sure, but I'll say this. I was working as musical director for a group called The Vocals, and we ended up traveling with we got a call to go on the road with Ray Charles. And the reason you never heard of the group The Vocals is because in 1966 they changed their name to The Fifth Dimension. And that was the beginning of that one. Now, they met Jimmy Webb. They got the song Up, Up, and Away. Unfortunately for me, I got drafted, so I ended up Up, Up, and Away in Vietnam. But that was actually the beginning of it.
Okay. So after Vietnam, and of course we know... We know that the Fifth Dimension, were they the Vocals when they were at Maverick's Flat? Because we know that they got their start at Maverick's Flat also.
Yeah, they were originally the Hi-Fis, and they did some shows with Ray, some TV shows. Then they changed it to the Vocals, and finally they ended up as the Fifth Dimension. And it's funny, the reason I'm living where I am in Nevada is Lamont McLemore, the tall guy in the Fifth Dimension, that's been trying to get me here for years, and we finally came and took a look. And my wife liked the place, and we live here now. I'm about 2 miles from Lamont. And one of my best buddies, who I know you will know, is Sonny Charles from the Checkmates.
Oh, please. And sidebar, just let me say this. You know, the music world really is small. Right now, my sister, her name is Cynthia Bass, and my very, very good friend, whose name is Sydney Davis, they are singing behind Billy and Marilyn now. They've been with Billy and Marilyn for about a good 10 years now. So, you know... So they've been working.
Marilyn and I went to
high
school together. Marilyn went to Dorsey.
Did Marilyn go? Well, okay, that figures. That figures. I can see that.
Yeah, Marilyn went to Dorsey, and the Ron Townsend, who died, the heavyset guy, was the janitor at Dorsey. He was the janitor at Dorsey.
He was the janitor?
Yes.
Wow.
So that's just some more music business history.
All right. So you had to go to Vietnam, then what?
I came back, and it took me a little while to adjust because, you know, war is not the best place for you to go if you're trying to be creative or even if you're just trying to stay alive. When I came back, it took me a little while to get social again. But...
Mm-hmm.
I started doing sessions, you know, and I started doing sessions at Motown, and it grew from there. We just got to the point where that's what we did, which is, it was like an everyday job. You go in and make records. You know,
right.
So We recorded everything from the Jackson 5 to Barbra Streisand to Herb Alpert to Lonnie Hall as his wife. You name it, we were making records. And it was the greatest time because there were so many different kinds of people working with each other. Everybody was learning and enjoying doing it. Yeah, so you could walk out of... Go ahead, please.
Well, no, you go ahead. Tell me about the Motown experience.
Well, we were... Once Motown moved here, we were like what the Funk Brothers were in Detroit.
Right.
So, like you say, they came to town. Actually, they bought a studio, which was originally Poppy Studios, and I knew the lady, Arlene Rosen, who built it. Yeah, and Motown ended up buying that and making it Motown West. But they got out here, and then we just started recording with all of the groups, which reminds me, before I forget, one of my other neighbors is Bubba Knight, Gladys Knight's brother.
Right, out there in Vegas, right? I just saw him not too long ago. At the Greek, because I went to go see Gladys and Kool & Gang, and he came out.
Oh, that was at the Hollywood, the Hollywood Bowl?
It was at the Greek.
Because we saw him at the Hollywood Bowl like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
No, you're right. It was the Hollywood Bowl. You're right. And because I threw up a review, and he came out singing Happy, and that was hilarious. So that brother is full of energy. Okay. So now, when you say we played for all these people, so does we mean that you were part of a unit that you played with all the time?
It was kind of a collective. There were like 3 or 4 drummers, 3 or 4 keyboard players, 3 or 4 bass players, like James Gatson on drums, Gene Pelos on drums, Paul Humphreys on drums. Piano would have been Michelle Rubini, Mike Lane, me, and there's somebody else, but that's what happens when you get this age. You know what you want to say, can't remember the name. Guitar players were like Jimmy George, Dean Parks, Willie Hutch. I mean, it was just music going on every day.
The elite. That's what it was the elite. And how wonderful is it to be able to make a living doing something that you are passionate about? Just, you know, your job is going to the studio every day and playing for everybody under the sun. And when I say everybody under the sun, I am going to list just only a few because I cannot, it would take too long to go through everybody, but Billy Preston, Bill Withers, Stanley Turrentine, Johnny Mathis, Denise Williams, Bill Withers, let me see, who else? Ray Charles, and I want to hear that Ray Charles story too. James Taylor.
Yep.
The Whispers.
Seals and Croft.
Freddie Hubbard, Seals and Croft, Hall and Oates, okay? The Emotions.
But that That was the fun of it. Getting
the Jackson 5. Let me not leave out the Jackson 5, please.
Oh, no. In fact, when the Jacksons were up here, we saw them like here on the Strip about 3 months ago. It was good. I didn't get a chance to talk to Jermaine because we left just before it finished. But it was just good to see them still working it out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They got to carry that legacy on. Now, tell me, let's hear the story about Ray Charles.
Okay. First of all, let me say this about Ray Charles.
Okay.
Everybody, you know, we throw the word genius around, and it's been overused. I'm going to say this. Ray Charles was a genius. Ray Charles could sit there with his big band and say, a third trumpet, That's an E flat in bar 47, not an E. He had the biggest ears in the world. And most
right.
people don't know. You need to get some of Ray Charles' saxophone albums. Ray Charles could play a saxophone as good as he could play a piano and sing.
I did not know that.
Oh, he has some records out. He sounds like Hank Crawford. But, no, Ray could play. I mean, and the other thing about him, it's amazing when you work with somebody and they can literally make you cry, especially when you're in the business of doing music. But he could sing Georgia on My Mind, and it would bring tears to my eyes because he had an emotion in his voice and so much sage wisdom in his voice. When he opened his mouth to sing, if you couldn't feel that, you might want to check your pulse.
Okay. And I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you about that. And I've had also some friends, a couple of friends of mine, girlfriends of mine, have worked with him as Ray Letts in the past. And so they have stories to tell about Ray. But... about, you know, all the rigors of being on the road with Ray. But at the end of the day, you are right, genius. I mean, he has some stuff that came out of his throat that, you know, that to me, they came straight out of the cotton fields. You know what I'm saying? That kind of feeling, it came straight from the cotton fields. That's where it came from. It's like, you know, he was before James Brown, he, you know what I'm saying? As far as I'm concerned, he was like, they want to call James Brown the godfather of funk, which he is, because, you know, we got to give up credit where it's due.
Yeah.
But, you know, James got influenced by somebody, and that somebody was Ray Charles.
But when we were on the road with Ray, we were either 2 days behind James or 2 days in front of him. Because, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was the Chitlin' Circuit, so there were only so many places you could work. But now you're talking about going on the road. In the 60s, things, that was tumultuous times because we had, I'll give you a couple of road stories. One of them is, I don't know if you've seen the movie Ray, but
yes, of course.
There, he was coming back from Canada into Boston. And when he landed, he was stopped by the local constabulary, or as they say in the hood, the police.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the plane because the vocals, or what later became the Fifth Dimension, was the opening act.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that's one of the stories with Ray. But we had one other one that we refer to as Julio Schwartz. A guitar player named Don Peake, who you would probably remember from that opening lick on Let's Get It On, bum, 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 bum. That's
yep.
Don Peake. And
okay.
The thing that was so hilarious was we had gotten to, I think it was Montgomery, Alabama, and the law had said now you can no longer segregate. Or you can
right.
no longer keep blacks from coming to the shows. So the state troopers, in their infinite wisdom, says, oh, well, we got this worked out. We just ain't going to let no white people in. You know, we going to keep this going one way or another.
Right.
So we're driving in, and Dante is a Jewish, and the state troopers get on the bus, guns
mm-hmm.
out. And then they look at Don, and they're gonna take Don. Ed Razor, he's Mexican. He don't speak no English. And they left him alone. So that's why nowadays we call Don Peake Julio Schwartz.
And that actually worked.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember, you know, these weren't the brightest bulbs in the marquee.
Okay. I heard that. Now, I did
hear
that.
Oh, no, but we
that.
Had so many stories. Well, you know the record Georgia on my, Ray's record Georgia on My Mind. At
yeah.
one time, he was not allowed to go into Georgia.
Mm. not even go into Georgia?
Oh, yeah. He would not co-sign segregation. So
right.
That's where Georgia on My Mind, him singing it, that was the story. It was actually written about Hoagie Carmichael's sister, but that's another story, you know, old record business story. But that's what Ray was singing about. I got Georgia on my mind because he was not allowed to go into Georgia.
Well, baby, he sang the heck out of that one. So listen, this 8:40, and we have not played one song, so we need to start playing some songs. So now, we're going to start with one of my all-time favorites, which is The Best of My Love by Emotions. I love those girls. Love them. So can you give us a little tidbit before we play that song?
Yes, I will. The story is how we ended up. I produced that record with Maurice White, how we ended up doing it in L.A. I got a call from Maurice, and he'd asked me if I would co-produce the record. So I flew to Chicago, and I remember very distinctly, I got there, and it was the day Mayor Daley died. Now, I flew in with my little Hollywood suit and my little Hollywood overcoat and my little Hollywood loafers. I got off the plane. It was so cold. I actually saw a polar bear trying to buy a shawl or a sweater. Yeah, I mean, I was with Maurice, and I told him that I meant it in all sincerity. I would love to do this project, but y'all got to do it out west. And it was, like I told him, you realize if it's cold enough to kill your Mayor Daley, I don't stand a chance here.
Okay.
And that's how we ended up recording the Rejoice album out here in Los Angeles.
Because you said, I cannot take this cold weather. It will not work for me.
Oh, no, and I was not lying. I got back home, and the little shoes I had on, they were cold 4 days later. They were still over in the corner quivering.
Okay, you need to quit. Okay, so here we go with The Best of My Love by The Emotions on Everybody is a Star. Bam!
Cause I love so many good.
Boy, those girls, they knew they could sing. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I saw you on Unsung on their episode not too long ago. I want to say about 3 weeks to a month ago. I saw you on TV talking about these
movies. Well, you know, I like to go out and get a little popular every now and again. No, the part that made that so hilarious, I was happy to do that because I love that group. But
yeah,
the company, A. Smith Company, we had just moved here. And when they called me about doing it, I just laughed. I said, why didn't you call me 3 weeks ago? Because where we lived in Toluca Lake was probably 5 blocks from where their office was. You wait till I leave town. Not even sad to do this. But
well,
you know what?
Great.
That song still makes me smile. Because
me too. I had to get up and cut a little step.
Well, like I said, I can still get down. I just have trouble getting up.
Oh, okay, I heard that. Yeah, but the emotions, those girls, boy, it's something about, you know, when you're a family and you got that chemistry.
Thank you.
You know, there's nothing that can touch that. Okay, so we're going to go down your list because I want to make sure that we get every song that you submitted as being some of your favorite songs that you've ever done in your long career, you know, so it's very important to me that we see these songs. So.
Okay, can I do something first?
Yeah.
Can I do something first? I'd like to just give a shout out to Tom Tom 84, who did the horns on that Rejoice album. Al McKay, my longtime friend, who was Mr. Guitar Stroke and still is, and Pauline Bass and percussion Paulinho de Costa, because a lot of times people don't know who did those records. It was so many different people from so many different places. The emotions themselves, their sound will never be duplicated.
You're right about that, never. And they were working closely, like they were signed to Maurice's production company, weren't they?
Yes, Columba.
Right. Yeah, see, I was paying attention. I saw what's going on. Okay, so now the next song we're going to play is Lovely Day by, of course, Bill Withers. So, you know, let us know what was going on with that one.
I got a story for you.
I know you do.
You want to play it and then I'll tell the story?
No, I want you to tell me the story first.
Okay. Hilarious times. I was traveling on the road with James Taylor at the time. And what I was doing is on the off days, I was flying in and working with Bill. And you know how when you hear a song, you say, oh, this is going to be fun.
Right.
But there was the drummer, Russ Conkle, who was playing with James Taylor. He played with lots of the White acts. But anyway, I told Bill, I said, you know what, this is the guy we need for this. And Bill says, well, I've never had a white guy, on drums, because he usually always had James Gatson, who is one of my best friends.
I've interviewed James Gatson on the show.
Oh, that's one of my longtime buddies, always will be.
Mm-hmm.
But as it turned out, it was so hilarious because Russ came, we both came to L.A., we recorded that, and I think I was in for like a couple of days, and we had to go back on the road with James Taylor, but it was just hilarious. That was the funny story, because most people never really, it's what they imagine, because the other funny thing was one of my favorite drummers, his name is Ed Green, who's also white.
Yeah.
But he did all the Barry White songs, and most guys had no idea. No, man, that was Ed Green. I said, yes, I know. But that was the Bill Withers story. And once again, by the way, Tom Tom did the horns and strings on that. So you see, when you start looking, you'll start to find there's some common threads through all of this music.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so there you go. We're getting ready to listen to Lovely Day, Bill Withers. Bam, everybody's a star. And it's McDonald's. That Bill Withers, when I first heard his voice, I said, who is this man? He just came out with one hit after another, just seemingly out of nowhere. I have always been a Bill Withers fan, and the keyboards on there are just like, what's the word?
I know I the can't keyboard even think player.
I can't even think of the word for the flavor that those keyboards bring on that song. OK, okay, we're going to keep this going because, you know, I'm in party mode now. So we were talking about
okay,
that.
But I got to say this, please.
Okay,
please
go ahead.
Let me say this. This is a Bill Withers story. He called me one day. He says, Mike, I just cost us a bunch of money. A rapper who I'm not going to name wanted to use the song, except he wanted to change it to It's an Effed Up Day.
Oh,
and he
Lord.
Says, man, I know I should have called you first, but I told him no. I said, well, you could call him back and tell him I said no. Because that's the other thing about the songs that I want to point out. When and this is what makes me happy personally. When you can hear songs 25, 30 years later and they still give you a good feeling, then you know you did something good. Because
absolutely.
I was just telling my wife, I can't imagine like 10 or 15 years from now, a guy grabbing his wife and kids saying, baby, come on in. They playing our song. Back that thing up. You know,
okay.
It's like you got to make some music that says something that makes people smile. And that, for me,
you know what?
Is still what I'm trying to do.
And that's what you have done. And if you never play another song again in your life, you have played a lifetime worth of songs that can be put in a time capsule and shot up in the outer space so that the aliens, like 5,000 years from now, if they want to know what real music sounds like, okay, you playing on all the real music, okay? So speaking of that, we're going to go to this James Taylor song. Now, you had the gig, you were doing Bill Withers, you were flying in doing James Taylor. I mean, you were a busy brother. Whoa, you were a busy brother. So
yeah, we was rolling. That's the way we used to roll in them days.
I heard that. Especially the big ballers and the shot callers. Now, tell us about your smiling face.
It is funny because James did an interview with Charlie Rose, and it's amazing because he was saying, Charlie Rose said, I found out that President Obama's favorite tune is Your Smiling Face. And James says, you know, yeah, but a piano friend of mine played that lick that made the song what it is, which is that
da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
And it just got me because at the time, I was just thinking, oh, there's a hole here that just needs something. And you play it, and to think that it's been remembered 30 years later and ended up being liked by the president, I can't be happier about that. But James Taylor is a class act. And he's made the same kind of music that lasts for years. You know, you see Fire and Rain, Don't Let Me Be Lonely Tonight, and Your Smiling Face. It's, once again, it's about lovely day, smiling faces, all the things that make people happy. So we can play this one, and I'll be smiling about it, too.
And I just want to say this. You know, the thing about it is, Clarence, is that you are gifted. What you have is a gift. It is a gift from God. And so you call yourself filling up a hole. That's what you were doing, and your mind is filling up a hole. But that's not what you were doing. You were doing what you were ordained to do. That's what you're supposed to do right there in that little hole. That's why the president was talking about it. You know what I'm saying? Those things don't happen by accident. And James Taylor, and let me just say this about him, that was a sweet gig, and I know a lot of folks wish that they had been in your place on that gig right there, on that James Taylor gig. So
I'd met him because I was playing with Carole King. I did her two tours with Tapestry in 73 and 75, and James came out in 75, and we ended up starting to work together in 76 because they were trying to do a record, How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You, and I remember
right.
Russ Titelman and Lenny Warnke, who were his producers, they said, well, we've done a few things. We had a hit on it, but we want to try this one. Can you play this one? I said, I think I can get through it.
Speaking of Russ Titelman produced some Grand Central Station stuff in the beginning of our stuff. Russ Titelman was producing. Well, his name was down as a producer. Let me put it like that. And so, wow. It's just Such a Small World. I just love. Talking to these stories, we could go on forever. But right now, we're getting ready to play Your Smiling Face, James Taylor, Clarence McDonald, keyboard. Here we go.
Hi.
Whenever I see your smiling face, I have to smile myself, because I love you. Pretty little pout, it turns me inside out. There's something about you, baby, I don't know. Isn't it amazing a man like me can feel this way? Tell me how much longer it will grow stronger every day.
And the thing about I like about James Taylor is he has a little bit of soul going every once in a while. He can hit those notes every once in a while. I'm a James Taylor fan.
Oh, I have been for years. And like I said, he's just a fun guy. About, I guess, 6 years ago, another dear friend of mine, Stu Levin, and I decided we were going to take a trip down memory lane. James was playing at the Hollywood Bowl. So we decided, okay, we're going to get a limo. We're going to take this ride back to the 70s. Of course, now we're talking about getting some antacid instead of anything else. So we get there, we go backstage, and I see James, and I was telling him, I said, you know what? It ain't fair. Look, our hair is gray. And he turned around, and he says, shut up. You got hair.
Okay, beautiful hair, too. I love your picture. So, yeah, that's right. You hold on. James had a point, okay? He had a point. But one thing about him.
I got to tell you this, too. Go ahead, please.
One thing about him, he seems to have, like, the sweetest, genuine spirit. I don't know him. I've never met him. But, you know, just listen to his music and seeing him a million times on TV, he seems to be a very genuine person.
Oh, yeah, music is always the window to the soul. You can tell
right.
a lot about somebody, and you can do it in less than 8 bars. You can find out what you're dealing with. So,
oh, you better say
yeah,
that.
He's still one of my favorite people.
Okay.
Which reminds me, speaking of Graham Central Station, I wrote some horn parts for the first album that you all did after you left Slack. I can't remember what the song was now.
What?
Yeah, I wrote.
Well, you know, I didn't have any. You know, dealings with that part. Larry put all that together, but I didn't know that. Now you're going to make me go, it was the first album, now I'm going to have to go dig it out. The first album was called Graham Central Station, so now I'm going to have to go dig it out and see what horn part you wrote.
Yeah, because I used to do, you know what, when you found something you like, you would write some horns, like I did, we'd go around in a circle with Billy Preston. You know, I didn't do that much arranging because, you know, I was too busy producing. But every now and then you hear something, it's like, yeah, hang on, let me go get my pen. I think I got a little something for you.
Right.
But no, I didn't thought about that until you mentioned it. And
okay,
one more
well,
thing,
have
and
to
I have to do these
out.
before I forget, because, you know, my memory ain't quite as long as my hair. But I want to tell you my 40-year story.
Okay,
I recorded with Ray Charles in 1964. We did Live at the Shrine Auditorium. It was either 64 or 65. And then on his last album, Genius Loves Company, I'm sitting there on the piano with Ray, and Ray said, man, thank you for playing on my record. And he called me Little Mac because Lamont McLemore from the Fifth Dimensions was Big Mac. And I told him, I said, you mean thank me? I said, most of what I'm playing today, I learned from you. And I had written an arrangement with David Blumberg, and I'm trying to think of the other gentleman's name, but it ended up getting the Grammy. It was Ray with Gladys Knight, Heaven Help Us All. And it had been 40 years since we set up in RPM Studios together. So that was my 40-year anniversary with my buddy Ray Charles.
Wow, that's, you know, what can I say but wow on that one.
You know, but bring back so many memories.
I'm no good. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. So now the next song we're playing is Sarah Smile, which has really, when I say stuff has been one of my favorite all time, I really mean that. I'm not lying. Hall & Oates, those boys, they came out. I'm like, who are these boys right here? So, because this boy, he is singing. So tell me a little bit about that, Sarah Smile.
Okay. Oh, my God. Chris, and I'm trying to think of his last name, who produced them, was a friend of mine. And I remember he called me to come over to Larrabee Studios to overdub on the record. And as soon as I heard it, all I could say is, if we don't do anything real dumb, this is a hit. I mean, the only way this don't sell is if we find a way to mess it up. And I remember putting on keyboard part. And you know how you walk out the door and it was like, I should have went back in there and paid them. Because if music doesn't touch your heart, then you're on a job. I've always been fortunate enough to consider it a profession. And I knew from the time I heard the track that that song would be around for a long time, and I'm happy to say every time I hear it, I still love it.
And I'm sure you smiling right along with Sarah, too, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so here we go. I'm Everybody Is a Star, Sarah Smile.
Warm me, and when I feel I can't go on, you come and hold me. It's you and me forever. Sarah, if you feel like leaving, you know you can go. But why don't you stay until tomorrow? If you wanna be free, you know, all you got to do is say so. And when you feel cold, I warm you. And when you feel you can't go on, I come and hold you. It's you and me forever. Won't you smile at me, Sarah? Sarah, smile. Won't you smile at me, Sarah?
That's a beautiful song right there.
Oh, and by the way, the producer is Chris Bond.
Okay. All right. And it just takes so many, you know, it takes so many elements to make a hit record. People don't understand that. And every little nuance, every little lick that each musician plays, you know, all that mixes together like a gumbo, if you will. And, you know, when they hit, okay, and like you said, you can tell, like you said, when you left that session, you wanted to pay them because you could feel it, you know, when it touches you from your core, you know, within your core, you could feel what's going on. And you have been, like, blessed to play on so many hit records, and I can't name them all, but we're going to continue to go down your list, okay? And the next song we have is Summer Breeze by Susan Clark. Now, drop me a tidbit.
Okay, producer Louis Sheldon. And same situation. This was, I think, recorded over at the Sound Factory in Hollywood. And we worked on it for like 2 or 3 weeks. But once again, it's back in the days where they made albums where every song was a story. It was like you had chapters leading up to a story. You had themes.
Right.
And that was the joy of making music, because everything you played was in some way connected to something you had already played in the previous song. There was a common thread and musicality that carried through. Like I said, in those days, you had to make it. When you made an album, you better have at least 5 songs that people want to buy. And
okay,
that was that typical. That was that sort of that sort of record. There are like 5 or 6 songs on there that turned out to be hits. So let's play it. I'm going to sit over here and keep smiling.
And you know somebody else who, sidebar, somebody else who was excellent at doing that was Barry White. You know, he knew how to do what you just said to the 10th power.
Oh, yeah. Well, I recorded a lot of that stuff. We did that over in Glendale, and I'm trying to think of the name of the studio, with Gene Page. And now I can't even think of the name of the studio. But, yeah, we did lots of work with Barry White.
Yeah, and he was excellent at doing what you just described. So right now, on Everybody Is a Star, Summer Breeze, Seals and Cross. Here we go. Bam.
Bam. Sunday night. Little light is shining through the window, let me know everything's alright.
The summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
Paper laying on the sidewalk, a little music from the house next door. So I walk on up to the doorstep, through the screen and across the floor.
Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
Days of summer, the jasmine's in bloom. July is dressed up and playing her tune. And I come home from a hard day's work, and you're waiting there, a care in the world. She's a smile waiting in the kitchen, food cooking on the plate for two. Feel the arms that reach out to hold me in the evening when the day is through.
Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
Of course, we know the Isley Brothers took that song and took it to another whole level. You know what I'm saying? They took it to another whole level. But the beautiful song, once again, another beautiful, timeless, classic song.
Well, you know what I loved about this song? I never played a piano fill until the end of the song. Sometimes songs are so beautiful, all you want to do is figure out how to complement it without getting in the way. Just before it faded, I played one piano lick. And by the way, a little quick history. There were two piano players, Larry Nettle, who was, and myself. And once again, there were two drummers. One of them was Jim Garden, and the other one was Russ Kunkel. Bass player was Wilton Felder and Harvey Brooks. And the percussionist on there is the guy I played golf with this morning, King Harrison.
Okay. Still
that's
hanging
what
in
I love.
With the legends.
Yeah.
Still, y'all still. As a matter of fact, speaking of that, on Facebook, Robert LeBlanc threw up a picture of, it was about eight of you guys on there. I said, look at him. Look at him, just in Vegas, just taking over. Vegas don't even know what's happening. You know, they don't even know who they got there. You know what I'm saying? It was a wonderful picture, a lovely picture. I loved it.
Oh, it was so much. It was Bubba Knight and Little Anthony, Lamont McLevore, Harry Elston from the Friends of Distinction, Robert LeBlanc. Oh, my God. Porter, I can't think of, yeah. with the Platters. I can't think of his name right now. But, yeah, you know what? They invited me to that, and I had so much fun. It's kind of like being with all of the elder statesmen.
Thank you. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It looked like Mount Kingmore or some kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? All that legendary, iconic energy, you know what I'm saying? I was just happy to be able to look at it. Now, we are winding down, and I have one last song to play, but before I do, what I want to ask you is, we touched on it a little bit, but what advice would you give to artists who are up and coming, who are serious about keeping the music authentic and true?
I would say, first of all and foremost, be true to what's inside of your heart. Do not become a clone to somebody else's idea of what music is, because it's so easy to be somebody and so hard to be somebody else.
Oh, say that one more time. Say that one more time.
It is much easier to be somebody than it is to be somebody else.
Woo, I'm going to go write that down. I hope y'all heard that. Okay, go ahead.
No, but have something in your heart that makes you smile. Like you say, the hit is when you've done something you like, and if you like it, there's a much better chance that other people will like it. There are too many people following that theory now, make another one like the other one. And
right. That
just proves that you didn't really come to make the music.
You came to make the money.
Well, and there's no harm in making money. But, like I said, music will last a long time, and the money will, you know what? If you're chasing money, it's like my father told me one time. He says, you can be one of two people. He says, either you can be the road runner or you can be the toll booth. You can be the one who stands there in the road and gets money from everybody going by, or you can go chasing something. And I finally understood what he meant. He said, you got to stand for a little something, because if you don't, you fall for anything. So
the
idea is, do what's in your heart, because it can't get more right than that.
That's right. Absolutely. I agree. Do you have any shout-outs? Now, I know it's a million people, so let's whittle it down to, you know, maybe 100.
Oh, then I'd still be in trouble with about 300 more. I have so many people that I know and love. Which reminds me, I don't know if you've done an interview with David T. Walker, but he's one of my favorite people.
Not yet.
Well, please do, because he's one of the sweethearts of all time. But, yeah, my shout-out is to everybody I've ever worked with and may work with again. It's been fun, and we ain't through having it. And I must give props to my dear friend Sonny Burke, who was Smokey Robinson's musical director for 34 years. He gave me a line, and I can't take the publishing on this because it belongs to him, but my credo in life is, I just want to be the best friend a good time ever had.
Oh, see, you're going to make me get my pencil out again. I want to be the best friend that a good time ever had. I got it. It's done. Now, when I write the song, I might give you a little publishing.
Hook me up. You know, I need a little bit. You know, you don't need it.
We won't go there.
Yeah, I need a whole bunch of money.
Where can we go to find out about all things Clarence McDonald?
You can either go to allmusic.com or clarencemcdonald.com.
Okay.
Really, I'm real easy. I ain't keeping no secrets. I'm telling everybody everything.
And you're also on Facebook. That's how I managed to get a hold of you, because you're on Facebook.
I must say this. My wife, who is my best friend, she makes me look a lot better on Facebook than I really am. And as a matter of fact, she's working on a project that I hope you all get a chance to talk about at some point. And she was doing a documentary on all of the session players from the 70s up to the mid-80s. And she's gotten Ray Parker. Who else did you get? She's gotten James Gadson, Jay Graydon. And she's just putting together, it's called The Musicians Behind the Music, and I'm so happy that she decided to do it. So it's
and
another
I'm happy
thing we'll talk about
too.
At another time.
Yeah, let's please do that. Let's please do that because that's, what's her name?
Susan, my best friend, okay. McDonald.
Okay, because, you know, that's what I'm about. This is what Everybody Is a Star is about. I'm reaching out to everybody behind the scenes, north, south, east, west of the scene, you know what I'm saying? I'm not just going for that person that's always out front and we know, we think we know everybody about them. I want the real people, the icons, the legends, the ones who, that, you know, it took to make this one person the quote-unquote star. So these are the kind of stories that I'm looking for. So that would be great. I would love to do that. So, you threw me off when you said that. I got excited. So, we are going to, the last song we're playing is Get Up and Dance by the Memphis Horns featuring DJ Rogers. Now, DJ Rogers is a longtime friend of mine, and that's a singing brother right there. So
yes,
give us a little, drop us a little tidbit on that one.
Okay, that's another one of those fun stories. Alan Abrahams, who I just spoke with 2 days ago, and I had produced the Memphis Horns, and they were coming out, and they didn't have all of their songs. And we just decided, you know what, we got a couple of days before they go in the studio. Let's go get some pencils, and we're going to lock the door, and we ain't coming out until we get some music. And
okay.
DJ Rogers came, and he brought everything to life, because I did that first album with him over at Shelter Records. See, all of the Church House boys hung out together. But what I like about this dude, the Memphis Horns were kind of like the Muscle Shoals Horns. They did all of the stuff in Memphis. And most people didn't know how many records they were on, and it was just time that they made a record with their name on it. But the other reason I like this tune is, this is what we just used to call old school funk. So, yeah, put it on and let's go.
Well, you know what, Clarence, I'm trying to abolish that term old school, and I'm trying to, I'm on a mission to change it to true school. Okay, so, you know,
that's
if you can
Tony
remember,
Boyd.
Huh?
Yeah, no,
absolutely.
Tony Boyd. Has...
That's absolutely where I got that from. And he is right, and I am carrying on his vision because that's the way I look at it. I look at it as true school as opposed to old school. And before we play this, and the reason why is because, quickly, just let me say, is because, you know, in America especially, anytime something is labeled as old, in Americans' eyes, it loses value. You know, they're ready to throw it away. Anything that's old, they're trying to get rid of it. You know, like in other cultures, people understand and realize that, that, you know, wisdom is connected with old, or, you know what I'm saying? Elder people, they are respected for their wisdom and what they can bring and how they can enhance somebody who has good sense, how they are going to get their advice, how they can enhance their lives. But here in America, we don't think that way. Anything old, we ready to get rid of it. So why I'm on that with Tony. I'm trying to change that to true school. Okay, so now before we play this song, I would just like to say that For all things chocolate, you can go to PatriceChocolateBanks.com. And I would like to shout out my family. I would like to shout out the Facebook Nation, all the Funkalutionaries, Team Chocolate, Stozo the Clown. We're getting ready to start a Funkalution. It's going to be worldwide. Y'all get ready and stay tuned. And I want to say God bless every one of you, and may the funk continue to be with you. And I want to Johnson, who is the creator of Tribe Family Channel. And with that, I hope I got everybody and said everybody. And with that, Clarence, I just want to say that I have had so much fun with you tonight. And you need to write a book. That's what you need to do.
I'm working on it. I've had enough people tell me that. And
that's,
I tell you what,
you
in 18 months, if it ain't out, I'm due for a spanking.
Okay, I agree with that. I'm going to let somebody else spank you. But you need to go ahead on and write that book, because we need that history. You know what I'm saying? We need it. So do that. You know, take that time and do that. And in the meantime, I hope that do you have anything current right now that you're working on? Because if you do, I would love for you to come back, and I would love to promote it.
I appreciate it, and I will be back. Another quick thing I wanted to say, because a lot of times people don't even know that we're being recycled again. I used to write with Denise Williams and my writing partner Fritz Basket and Lonnie Groves. I don't know if you remember a tune, Silly.
Of course, Silly of Me to Think That.
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay, well, that's a tune we all wrote together. But that tune came back with Monica. She did it as Everything to Me.
That's right, she did. That's right.
That was Silly. That is an adaptation of Silly. And I had another song that I had written and produced on the jazz singer Nancy Wilson back in 1977. And it was Erykah Badu. They took a sample, and it was a tune called Honey. So they could say, we're still around. People just always love it when the kids say, hey, man, have you heard this tune? It's like, yeah, I heard where it came from 35 years ago.
And let's not forget Everything to Me by Jasmine Sullivan.
Hello.
I did my homework. Missy Elliott, they did their writing and production work over that timeless melody, you know, and Jasmine came up with Everything to Me. So you are still doing your thing. You have not finished, and you got to go till the wheels fall off, and you are relevant today, and you are right. People need to know that, but they can go once again. Give us your website once again so people can know exactly what you're doing. One more time.
It's ClarenceMcDonald.com.
All right, that's very easy.
And it's McDonald like the hamburgers. So.
All right, all y'all funketeers, y'all got that. All right, so here we go. We're going to ride it on out with Get Up and Dance featuring DJ Rogers with the Memphis Horns. And Clarence, I cannot thank you enough, and I will hope to be talking to you again real, real, real soon. And may the funk be with you.
I love you much, Patrice. Thank you.
All right, here we go. Bam.
Get up and dance. Thank you. stop and do.